all across America and around the world. Welcome to America's number one veterans program, Veterans Radio. And now, live from the studios of WDEO in beautiful Ann Arbor, Michigan, here is your host for today's program, former helicopter pilot with the 195th Assault Company, his call sign, Sky Chief 202, Dale Throneberry.
Good morning, world, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My call sign seems to expand every week. It's just 20, but we don't say 20 in the military. You say 20, right? Anyway, welcome to Veterans Radio, and welcome to all of our veterans and all of our friends along the way. We're having some really fun technical programs going on here. Anyway, Gary, you cannot watch the program and listen to it at the same time. Remember, the Internet, for those of you that are watching us on a web stream, it's about 2 or 3 second delay, so we want to make sure that you turn down your volume, especially if you give us a call or you're in the studio with us. Today's program is really special. This is the third part of our trilogy. Earlier on this year, I was interviewed by Gary and Bob was interviewed, and now we're going to be interviewing our third partner, and that is Gary Lillian. Gary, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Good. Also, in the studio running our visual board is Bob Gould.
Hey, how you doing, Dale? And Gary, by the way, you had yourself a little bit of a palpitation today, right, Dale, with today, Ann Arbor's Finest?
With Ann Arbor's Finest. Oh, yes, that story. One
that
of our nice sponsors.
That kind of gave you a little bit of a pause when they did a UE, right?
Yes, at one of our local sponsors, the Big Boy Restaurant in town, is where we normally meet every Saturday morning before the program. And as I was driving over this morning, you know how it's terrible when you see a police car going the opposite direction and they quick pull a U-turn behind you?
Busted.
And you're going, oh, no, now what have I done? And they followed me all the way to the Big Boy Restaurant, and I pulled into park figuring, okay, here's a license registration. And they pulled on behind me, parked next to the other three police cars that were there. They were just getting together for a little breakfast meeting.
Anyway, from Fort Riley.
Yeah, one
yeah,
of the
he
guys,
was
yeah.
Right. That, so yeah,
you had mentioned that
kind of lets you slide.
Yeah, yes,
but
you
have to get that taillight fixed.
I was waiting for them to follow me out of the restaurant. Anyway, also running our audio board today is Matt Doerr. Matt, thank you very much for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's kind of an unusual program this morning. As I mentioned, we're going to be interviewing Gary Lilly, CB Can Do, but we also have a guest on who's. How can I say, imminent demise was grossly exaggerated. As I was mentioning this morning, George Burns used to wake up every morning when he was in his 90s and check the obituaries, and if his name wasn't in there, he would get up. So now we have another guest for us, and Gary's going to be talking to him. So, Gary, you're on with your friend.
Gunny Lee Ermey, how's your health these days?
My health is primo. Never had a sick day in my life. I guess some people on the Internet have decided that it's time for me to go. I just my thing is I'm just trying to tell everybody, just be patient, you know. My time will come, I'm sure, but I'd like for it to be in about 25, maybe 30 years outside. But I feel good. This is the second time this has happened, you know.
You have more lives than a cat.
Well, I'm on number 7 now, I guess, if that's the case. But I read my own obituary. It was quite touching. Brought a little tear to my eye. I didn't realize so many people loved me.
Oh, you are so well loved. I'm telling you, the email and the Internet was hot with the reports of your death, and I even fell for it. I Googled the guy that wrote it. He looked legitimate. The guy that sent the information is a guy that's always on top of things. And I thought, oh, no, this is awful. Passed it on. Within 5 minutes, I had 25 corrections. It's a hoax. It's a hoax, which made me very happy.
Yeah, well, we've got it published in the newspapers, and we've tried to put this fire out as best we can. The phone, my manager's telephone hasn't stopped ringing in about a week and a half, so he needs to make phone calls. Please, folks, I'm not dead. Leave him alone. He needs to give me work.
You told me that you have to. You're telling all your friends that it's not time to put your stuff on eBay yet.
No. My shooting partner, Dennis DeMille, he's a two-time national champion, and he and I have been shooting together for years. And he called me. He keeps my gear because in California you can't even have a 10-round magazine, you know. And we need for the M14 that I shoot. I need an M-round. I need a 10-round magazine in order to compete. So he keeps my gear. And the other day the phone rang and I answered it and he was very disappointed. He said he's going to have to take all my stuff off eBay now right away. You know. But, of course, it was a joke, but, we can have fun with it. I am not dead. I've just pinched myself again, and I'm living, breathing, and felt the pain, so no problem.
Well, that's good news to the military world, and it's good news to the people that are fans of yours on your TV programs. What are you running one right now?
Running what?
TV program like you did.
Well, I'm just waiting on the History Channel to order 13 more episodes. Whether they do or not, that's up to them. But I'll tell you one thing I am doing, and I'm trying to get a bill through the Senate, and that bill is trying to change the Department of the Navy to the Department of the Navy and Marine Corps, trying to right a wrong that has been wrong for 235 years. Everybody else has their own department. The Navy, the Marine Corps, I guess, is like the red-headed stepchild. Here we are fighting and dying in Iraq and Afghanistan, bleeding in the sands of foreign countries. And we don't even have our own department, but we would just like to share the Department of the Navy so that we have a little. We are at least mentioned in the letterhead. I call it supporting the troops, and I think that we have 70, I think, pretty close to 80 sponsors in the Senate right now. We passed remember, you helped me, Gary. You were helping me out with this program. I was on your show a couple weeks ago, and we discussed it. But it flew through the Congress. It was like 97% of the Congress voted to pass the bill. And it was with them. It's like we support the troops. And the troops are over there bleeding and dying, and the least we can do is give them honorable mention on the letterhead. And I'm sure that the Senate will follow suit. I mean, it's that popular.
How many co-sponsors do you have in the Senate?
I believe it's close to 80 right now. And I'll tell you.
What could block it? What could stop it?
The only thing that could stop it would be the Armed Forces Committee if they decided not to bring the bill up for a vote. But I don't see that happening. I mean, it's the Armed Forces Committee. If there's anybody who supports our troops, it would be them, I would think, you know.
Carl Levin of Michigan is the chair of that, right?
That would be Mr. Levin, yes. But I'm sure Mr. Levin's heart's in the right place. He realizes, he looks at Congress, he sees it passes by 97%. That tells me that that's something that the American people would like to see happen. And I'm sure he'll follow suit. I mean, he's a reasonable person, and he's a good guy, so... You know, I don't think there's any way possible that Mr. Levin would block this from coming to a vote.
It doesn't seem logical. Lee Ermey, we've got to go to our welcome home now, but gosh, it's so good to hear you on the Veterans Radio and letting everybody know that, indeed, your health is good.
You know, Gary, you've always treated me well, and we've always... we work together quite nicely, I think. You know, one of these days we're going to have to get you out on the golf course and whip your butt. But between now and then, you're one of the few that have an open door. Anytime you feel that you need to talk to me about anything, you know, we have gays in the military coming up. We have, and I certainly have a lot to say about that.
Before we go, I wanted to mention one thing. There's a young lady here that we've had on Veterans Radio when she was 12 years old. She just turned 14, and she has sent over 35,000 cards to the troops now. And she met you a year ago or 2 years ago and said in an email to me that you treated her so nice. She was heartbroken, devastated to hear that you were dead. And then I sent out the correction to her, let her know that you were alive, and she was so relieved.
Great.
Yep. That's right.
There's a young lady whose life you affected. She just thinks that you have a lot of character.
Well, I love the kids. You know, I'm the spokesperson for the Young Marines, which is a youth organization sponsored by the Marine Corps League. And they have such potential. And I see young kids that mom and dad really haven't had time to work with them and provide them the proper leadership and guidance. And, you know, somebody has to, and it might as well be the Young Marines, but differences between day and night, and I love these young people. They all have tremendous potential, and they are the future of this nation.
They are. Treat them with respect, and they'll grow up to be good people.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's all about leadership and guidance. Gary, you have a wonderful Marine Corps day. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi.
And anytime you need me, I'm right here at the end of this line. Semper Fi. Have a great day.
I'll be calling you. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Goodbye.
All right, there you go. So we have audio proof. Harley Ermey is alive and well and living in California, and I appreciate him coming on the program so much. It's a great opportunity, folks, out there for you to find out what's going on. That's what Veterans Radio does. We've got some great contacts out there that are supporting our veterans, not just those that are on active duty, but also those that are retired and that need some help. So we want to make sure that this continues on. And Gary, thanks so much for doing that. If you want to ask questions of Gary, coming up in the next segment, we're going to be interviewing Gary Lilly and finding all about his secret life as a CB, and we'll see what happens with that. But right now we're going to go to our weekly segment, which is our welcome home thing, where we welcome home all of our troops coming home from around the world. And Bob, you're up.
Thank you, Dale. Welcome home each week on Veterans Radio. We welcome home servicemen and women who have been stationed around the world in the service of our country. Dateline, Nebraska, the corn state. Mm-hmm. Approximately 50 soldiers from the Nebraska Army National Guard's agribusiness development team were welcomed home today from a year-long deployment in Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, the soldiers assisted local Afghan farmers by conducting agricultural development planning, assessments, and support activities in north-central Afghanistan. Dateline, Nevada, we're out west. Family and friends welcomed home 110 airmen to Nellis Air Force Base. The airmen, assigned to the 58th and 66th Rescue Squadrons and the 763rd Maintenance Squadron, perform combat rescue operations, medical evacuation, and humanitarian missions while at Joint Base Balad, that's north of Baghdad. While deployed, they provided more than 2,000 hours of alert support, completed more than 400 missions, and saved 5 lives through medevac rescues. Dateline, Fort Hood, Texas. 1st Cavalry Division's Rear Attachment, the 3rd Heavy Brigade Combat Team of the 1st Cavalry Division soldiers, they arrived to the applause and cheers of family in front of the 1st Cavalry Division headquarters at Fort Hood. The returning group was the first of this Iraq deployment to arrive home, beginning of, here we go, quote, Gray Wolves, return to Fort Hood after a 12-month deployment to Iraq. Each week, Welcome Home is sponsored by the Marine Scholars Program of Ave Maria University. Visit them online at avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions. On behalf of a grateful nation and all of us here at Veterans Radio, welcome home.
You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill. The benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and I wanted to just take this quick opportunity to thank all of our listeners who sent in their thoughts about Memorial Day last weekend, and I apologize to many of you that I wasn't able to get them all on the air. They were very powerful and very meaningful, and hopefully as we got some technical problems that we can square away on our website, we'll get those up so that you can read them. They're very thoughtful, I think, and we got a great response from you, our listeners, on the Memorial Day program, and I wanted to make sure that I got the word out because I identified all of the music last week except for the song, The Fighting Man, that we played at the bottom of the hour, and that was sent to us by Sherry and Terry Smith, better known as The Country Connection. So if you wanted to listen to that song again, you can go to mymusicstream.com, and it's called The Fighting Man. I wanted to make sure that I got that in there. All right. Now, is everybody ready, folks? Because we're going to be talking to our partner and also veteran, Gary Lilly, who was a Navy CB, and I can't even understand all of the numbers that the Navy uses for their various and sundry designations. But Gary was deployed in 1966 to Chu Lai, Vietnam, as the military would say, and I'll let him talk about how many hours he put in more than anybody else. But it's MCB3, better known as Better Than Best. And Gary, as we say to all of our guests, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Dale. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I'm glad that you could fit it into your very busy schedule and that we had to tear you away from your book tour. I'm only kidding, folks. If you have a question that you would like to ask Gary, give us a call here at 877-573-7825. 877-573-7825. All right, Gary, let's go back, in your case, many years, and find out, how did you get into the Navy anyway? How did that happen?
Well, like a lot of people, the draft was coming up, and I thought I didn't want to be in the Army. My brother had been in the Army over in Germany, and he talked about walking around in mud as a combat engineer, and I thought, I don't want to walk in mud, so I joined the Navy Reserves. I did want to do 2 years. Not four. So they put me in an intelligence unit based on the testing that they give you, and I had to prove them wrong. So I transferred to the Seabees. And then after volunteering for Vietnam, I found myself walking around in mud over the tops of my boots with my feet writhing off, and I really thought I'd made a wise decision there.
And this is what year did you join the Navy?
Joined the reserves in 1963, went active in February of 1965, and was separated in about the 1st of February in 1967. Discharge followed a few years later.
Okay, so you still had your basic six-year obligation,
right.
Reserve obligation,
yep.
That type of thing. And so when you went to Vietnam, did you fly or did you go by boat?
We flew in a 4-engine prop plane that leaked so much oil out of each engine that the Arab sheikhs had to be grinning from ear to ear. And you realize how big the Pacific Ocean is when you're going around in a prop plane that's probably less than 200 miles an hour, which breaks down at every stop. Our first stop from Point Magoo, which is just north of Los Angeles, was San Francisco, where we broke down for 8 hours. Now, we'd already been delayed for 2 days because the plane was broken down waiting for parts. Our next stop was Hawaii. We broke down for 18 hours. next stop was Wake Island, and they're getting better. I think we only broke down for about 4 hours. Next stop was Guam, and we were all shocked we didn't break down. Next stop, Chu Lai.
And Chu Lai is where in Vietnam?
Chu Lai is about 85 miles south of Da Nang, which is one of the better-known names. It was in an area called I Corps for the military.
This is in the northern quadrant of South Vietnam.
Correct.
Up against the DMZ.
Right, right. Well, we were quite a ways from the DMZ. We were in the southern part of I Corps. So that would have put us about three-quarters of the way at least up, maybe four-fifths of the way up from South Vietnam, right on a beautiful spot on the coast. There's my John Wayne picture on the screen right now. Everybody had to have one of those.
For those of you that want to see what Gary looked like 112 years ago, you can click on to our website at veteransradio.net and click on the screen, and you'll be able to see the pictures of what we've got going here. And radio, we can't paint a picture of how skinny he really was. But moving right along, so we're in Chu Lai, which is, did you say it was on the beach?
We were right on the beach. We had a fabulous spot. We were supposed to camp inland, and they had assigned us or whatever they do a spot to set up our camp. And the day my squad arrived, there was a squad in there ahead of us. They didn't have any bunkers, which was just a circle of sandbags, or any wire up around us. And we just pitched tents. Squad, general purpose medium, squad size tent, 14 guys.
Right.
And we set up our tents. And the night that we arrived and set up, a battle started in the spot, the precise spot we were supposed to be in. A Marine was awarded the Medal of Honor. That's how fierce the battle was.
Wow.
And so there we were sitting over on the coast in a beautiful spot. And I would look out and think to myself, under any other circumstances, what a beautiful spot.
Well, we'll come back to that later on when we talk about, because you did go back to Vietnam last year. But let's talk about what your job was over there. What did the CVs do?
Well, we built things. We were there supporting the Marines. The I Corps was totally a Marine area at that time, area of responsibility. We built a lot of housing. That photograph that's being shown right now, I was up on a hooch nailing down steel roofs, and that was the hottest day that by sheer chance that I ever spent over there. And it was 138 degrees where we were. And what it lacked in temperature, it made up for in humidity, as
that's
you
true.
Well know.
That's true.
And now this photograph, that sun is reflecting right up on the steel. We had to have it nailed down within about a minute because then it was too hot to touch. And if we set a tool down and the sun moved or the shade moved and the tool was in the sun, we'd have to kick it over into the shade and let it cool off before we could pick it up. This is no lie. Every time I see a chicken in a rotisserie, I think back to these days. I know how the chicken feels.
And then we have all these images that we've put in our own heads or over that. If you've got a question for Gary, we're talking with Gary Lilly, one of the partners of Veterans Radio, and what his experiences were like in Vietnam. Give us a call at 877-573-7825. All right, so we're up in Chu Lai. We're on the beach, but you're building buildings in 130-degree heat. And what else did you do while you were there?
Well, we did a lot of things for the civilians, drilling wells. I wasn't on a well drilling team, but there are four companies in a CB battalion plus headquarters company. One would be basically builders. That would be Delta Company, which I was in, carpenters. Steel worker, Charlie Company would be steel workers and builders both. Bravo Company. I'm going backwards. The story of my life. Bravo Company is utility people, plumbers, electricians, and that's where the well drillers would be. And Alpha Company would be equipment operators and mechanics. So I was in Delta Company. We were all builders, carpenters. We did everything from building those hooches like I was nailing on in that one photograph, which were 16 by 32 foot huts that on stilts that people live, a squad would live in them. Right now there's a photograph up. We're building a building which I think, became the first hospital at Chulai. It was during the early part of the monsoons. There was a lot of mud there. It doesn't look like there's a lot of mud because we're standing on boards so that we could walk around. But actually, the mud we were in was over the top of the boots.
To remind our civilian audience out there that the monsoons in Vietnam were about 6 months out of the year, where it would rain every day, right around 3 o'clock at least where I was, and it would rain like you've never seen rain before. And all the pallets that would be put out, we would make these, and you probably did the same, they would make these walkways so you could get from one part of your company area to the other part of the company area. And then the monsoon rains would come that afternoon, and all the pallets would wash away. And you'd have to go out and rebuild your sidewalks.
I belong to Vietnam Veterans of America, and we do parades and outdoor events and all that. And anytime it's threatening, I'll just say it never rains on Vietnam vets. We've seen rain, and it does not occur in North America.
Not like that. Not like that, that's for sure. So, all right, so you're building all these other things over there, and you were there, when were you in Vietnam?
1966.
Pretty much that whole year?
Yes. We arrived the last day of February, first day of March, I forget which, and left on December 7th. A CV tour is a little shorter than everybody else's tour. It would be 8-month deployment unless you're on the advance party, which I was, in which case it's a 9-month deployment. You get there early and build a camp for the battalion
right.
that's coming. We packed a lot into it. During their weaker moments, the World War II CBs would tell us that they were never called on to do what we were being called on to do. And I learned that in our deployment that we put more materials in place than any CB battalion had ever done, and it's only been equaled once since, and that was by my same battalion the following year. We built everything from those hooches to help build the Chulai airstrip. And we're going to have a photograph coming up of a job site at night with cranes and all that. That was a triple box culvert for the crosswind runway and taxiways. That's camp at night with the flares popping. The job, we were called into formation, which is never a good thing when the Seabees, and it was at the end of August, and they said that the monsoons were coming and the Marines needed close-in air support. The Chulai airstrip, which was 9,000 feet long, was well underway, and they needed a 3,500-foot crosswind runway, reinforced concrete, very thick, and the taxiways. And first thing that had to happen is a swamp had to be drained. So I was on the job that went 24 hours a day, 6 at night to 6 in the morning, building this triple box culvert. They said it would take 45 days to do it. They gave us 23, and we did it in 13 days. I watched the civilian crew do an almost identical job a few years ago. It was a little bit smaller, as a matter of fact. The snow was flying at the end of winter when they started, and the snow was flying at the beginning of the next winter when they finished.
Well, it's kind of interesting. We're going to be coming up at the bottom of the hour here. We've got a question for Gary about, or you're a former CB, and you'd like to get your comments in here. Give us a call at 877-573-7825. Tell me about, real quickly in a minute, what's your best memory of your time in Vietnam?
The best memory, I would say, besides the guys you work with, the high spirits and the character of the people you work with, the Vietnamese people, I came to admire them a great deal for their industry, and it's showing up like down in Louisiana now, the shrimp boaters are and mm-hmm. a lot of these restaurants, you know, they're so successful. And you'd see the industry of the Vietnamese people and living their lives with the war going on around them, you know, for about 50 years of their life. I just came to really like them, other than when they were shooting at us.
Yeah, well, a lot of that time was the North Vietnamese, not necessarily
right.
all those in the South, although that was one of the problems. We're talking with Gary Lilly, and we're going to be coming up on our break at the bottom of the hour here. If you've got a question, give us a call, 877-573-7825. When we get back, I'm going to ask Gary about some of the people that he has met since Vietnam. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Navy Captain James Stockdale inflicted a near-fatal wound to himself to show his willingness to die rather than divulge information. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
Stockdale was recognized by the North Vietnamese as the leader in the prisoners of war resistance to interrogation and in their refusal to participate in propaganda exploitation. Sensing the start of another purge and aware that his earlier efforts at self-disfiguration to dissuade his captors from exploiting him for propaganda purposes had resulted in cruel and agonizing punishment, Stockdale resolved to make himself a symbol of resistance regardless of personal sacrifice. He deliberately inflicted a near-mortal wound to his person in order to convince his captors of his willingness to give up his life rather than capitulate. He was subsequently discovered and revived by the North Vietnamese, who, convinced of his indomitable spirit, abated in their employment of excessive harassment and torture toward all of the prisoners of war. Upon release from the captivity, he was promoted to Rear Admiral. The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio. You have honorably served the United States and the Marine Corps in times of peace and war. Now we would like to serve you. The Marine Scholars Program covers the total cost of attending Ave Maria University. By combining resources from the Ave Maria University Marine Scholars Funding, federal financial aid entitlements, and the GI Bill, the benefits are granted for the duration of the recipient's study at Ave Maria University, contingent upon good conduct and good academic standing. The Marine Scholars Program is open to all reserve and active component Marines and other combat veterans of Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom who have honorably served our country. Please visit us online at www.avemaria.edu or call the Assistant Director of Admissions at 239-280-2552. You helped us. Now let us help you. Semper Fi.
Back on Veterans Radio, and we did grow up with great music. There's no doubt about that. It certainly does speak of our generation, I guess you could say, especially during that time period. We're talking with Gary Lilly, one of our partners on Veterans Radio, and about his experiences in Vietnam. And now I want to ask you a little bit about your experiences when you came home, and what happened to you?
Well, I thought it was a unique story till I heard that it was pretty common, and I don't want to slam the World War II guys because we can't do that. No,
they've come around.
The bulk they've come around, and the bulk of them probably always were, but they rejected us. And first night driving back with a friend of mine, we stopped at an American Legion, and I had an image of the guys in there calling us over to the table, "Hey, how was it, son?" and all that, and it said they drank their beers and walked out angrily that we would be allowed in. The guy I was driving back with was a member of the American Legion. His dad got him to sign up. And they, on the way out, the one guy said to the bartender, "You know, come on up to the VFW. When you get off, they might let their kind in the Legion, but they'll never let them in the VFW. That's where the real war veterans are." And he stood at the far end of the bar after that, never talked to us. And, you know, my buddy and I sat there and finished our beer and walked out. It was quite a shock.
It's lucky that they didn't have one of those Saturday night fights.
you hear that about all, you know, the people that are spit on and they don't do anything. But, you know, the truth of the matter is my experience was you come back extremely tired and you come back just it catches you so much by surprise, something like that. And then, of course, the protest movement. I moved to Ann Arbor after a couple of years, and I was very confused.
We should tell people where you're from originally.
Originally, I'm from Detroit.
Okay.
I was an immigrant neighborhood in Detroit. It was blue
then
collar.
Then you lived up north in the
No, he was. Hey, he was from Brightmoor. All you listeners out there, right, Gary, babe?
Brightmoor.
Yeah, we're on Finkel. Finkel and Burt Road in Redford High School. Yeah.
Exactly. When I came back to Detroit, I didn't realize why I was so restless, and I moved up north for a while, and then I got restless up there, and I moved back, but I didn't want to move back to Detroit. I had a friend living in Ann Arbor, and I'd met some of his friends, so I moved to Ann Arbor. First night back, there was a protest down at the university, and a buddy of mine said, hey, let's go down and watch, and we went down, and there was tear gas, and thousands of people. And, you know, it's very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And to hear the baby killer accusations and all that, I became convinced, and I've learned a lot of other guys have too, that I happen to be around a whole bunch of good guys, but just over the hill were all the evil guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. Always the bad guys were elsewhere.
Yeah. And I became convinced and that we were war criminals. And after I joined, and I ended up a fifth-a-day drinker, and there was a real, you know, event that happened, that was real positive, that caused me to never have another drink again, and never want another drink again. It was just like that. I stopped, swore I'd never have another drink, and I'd live the rest of my life in a way that would honor Vietnam vets and not insult the ones that died over there. So then I decided I'm going to become a student. I want to find out what it was I lived through. And I've become a student of the war. Met a lot of amazing people since then. But I did learn that Vietnam vets have statistically more character and more success than anybody else in our generation.
Mm-hmm.
Just the opposite of what you'd think.
Yeah, we didn't see any movies about the true stereotypic Vietnam vet who went just very similar to the World War II vet. You know, they went home. They went to school, they raised families, they had jobs, and so on and so forth. And that, you know, based on the numbers, they weren't any different than World War II or Korean veterans.
Exactly. There was a Kevin Costner movie, and it was the title was The War, which did depict that. And it was, mm-hmm. Nobody watched it.
Right.
It wasn't very successful. And since then, I've met astounding people. From Duncan Hunter. He was a presidential candidate, but this goes back about to almost 20 years ago over coffee, and he told us that he was the chairman of the House Select Committee on POW/MIA Affairs at the time. It was 1990, and he told us about the intelligence that we have, the hard intelligence about our POWs of ours that were left behind, shipped up to the Soviet Union for interrogation and never seen again. Same thing happened in Korea. So, mm-hmm. To sit and talk with people like that with the astounding knowledge, to somebody like Young Kral, whose father was the ambassador for the National Liberation Front, which was the Viet Cong. The Viet Cong was their military arm. And he was the ambassador to the Soviet Union, where he arranged for all the arms and ammunition for both North Vietnam and the National Liberation Front. And she became a spy for the CIA and the FBI. The stories she has to tell are just amazing.
I can't remember the name of her book right now. I'm thinking, Tears as They Fall, or
A Thousand Tears Falling.
A Thousand Tears Falling. It's amazing the story that she tells about being living in South Vietnam with a father who was basically in the North the whole time. Real quickly, tell me about the Christmas bombing.
Well, and I've had it confirmed by somebody else since then. He told her husband when she arranged a meeting through the CIA where they could spend a week with their father. He flew over to Britain, and they flew over to Britain, and they were able to. She didn't know how her husband and her dad would get along because her husband flew bombing missions over the North, and they were like two warriors, you know, that mm-hmm. They'd go off for long talks. He told them that the Christmas bombing of 1972, had we kept it up three more days, they had already made the decision to surrender. They had written the surrender speech, talk, whatever, and sent word out to the into the combat areas that at a certain time on a certain day, somebody would come out from each unit with a white rag tied to a bayonet in surrender, mm-hmm. and then suddenly the bombing stopped. And it was the protesters that stopped the bombing. And that's one person, but a couple of weeks ago, I got a phone call from one of the guys on my email list for Veterans Radio. Can't remember exactly why he called, but he's a 73-year-old Vietnamese that was born in Hanoi and moved to the South and ended up flying missions over the North himself. He went back to Vietnam and was had to worry about arrest, but his mother was sick, and he hadn't seen her in 40-some years. So he went back, and his wife's uncle was one of the six guys that was sent down south, Colonel Vui Tin and some others, to accept the surrender of South Vietnam. He told his the uncle told him and his wife that they had made the decision to surrender on Christmas Day, or in 72 hours during mm-hmm. the Christmas bombing, but we stopped the bombing. I called Young Krall and told her about that, and I asked him, do you know Young Krall? And he said, I've heard of her, but I don't know her. And I told that to Young Krall, and you couldn't believe the excitement, because here it was confirmed by somebody else.
It's always nice to verify, you know, what things that happened 40 years ago. Sometimes we have a tendency to think, did I really remember it the right way, and how does it go? Well, Gary, you're very involved in veterans affairs and veteran service organizations, and you know, we've got about 2 minutes left as I'm going through there. Is there anything you'd like to tell the other veterans out there that are listening to us today?
Well, there's a couple of things. The first one, if you've got PTSD or anything, go in and make a claim for disability. You have earned it. I mean, my pay when I was in Vietnam was a little under $100 a month, and that was for 86-hour weeks and plus combat pay. This is prepaid things that we earned. Go in and get the disability. File for it. The other one is join veterans organizations, because the main purpose for veterans organizations is not to sit around and drink and tell old war stories, which is helpful to the because you're talking to people that have been there and can understand what you're talking about. But it's to lobby for veterans health care and for the care for these younger vets today. And we never forget the dead, but work for the living. And the founding principle of Vietnam Veterans of America is never again will one generation mm-hmm. of veterans abandon another. The Congress people, they look at numbers. Well, how big is your organization? And I'm so proud. I'm a life member of the American Legion, the VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and a couple of other things. But my heart's with Vietnam Veterans of America, and this group is intense and very active on Capitol Hill. And the main thrust has always been health care, and it was POW, MIA, and such, you know, and Agent Orange is still a big thing because it's used in this country.
Right, yeah, we're still starting it. And again, as we always say, we're running out of time.
Right.
We're down to 15 seconds. Thank you, Gary, for letting us interview you. Next week, Gary will be the host, and we're going to be talking to a couple of high school students from Ann Arbor Pioneer High School. We'll come in and talk about what we've done with them. Until next week, you are dismissed.
All views and opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views of Veterans Radio or your local station. Veterans Radio is a production of Veterans Radio, LLC.